Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Mistborn, The Final Empire, by Brandon Sanderson. Narrated by Terrence Aselford. With performances by Kimberly Gilbert, David Jordan, Thomas Keegan, Bradley Smith, Michael John Casey, Tony Nam, Michael Glenn, Danny Gavigan, Nick DePinto, Scott McCormick, David Harris, James Keegan, Gary Tells, Elizabeth Jernigan, Nora Ashrati, Eric Messner, Joe Brack, Dylan Lynch, Richard Rowan, James Konacek, Tim Carlin, Mort Shelby, Nanette Savard, James Lewis, David Coyne, Ken Jackson, Evan Casey, and Gregory Gorton. Mistborn, The Final Empire, Part 3 of 3.
No man dies by my hand or command, except that I wish there had been another way. Still, I kill them. Sometimes I wish that I weren't such a cursed realist.
Kelsier tossed another water jug into his pack.
Breeze, make a list of all the hideouts where you and I recruited. Go warn them that the Ministry might soon have prisoners who could give them away.
Breeze nodded, for once refraining from making any witty remarks. Behind him, apprentices scrambled through Clubs's shop, gathering and preparing the supplies that Kelsier had ordered.
Docs, this shop should be secure unless they capture Yeadon. Keep all three of Clubs's tin eyes on watch. If there's trouble, head for the bolt lair.
Doxon nodded in acknowledgement as he hurriedly gave orders to the apprentices. One had already left, bearing a warning to Renault. Kelsier thought that the mansion would be safe. Only that one group of barges had left from Felice, and its men had thought that Renault wasn't in on the plan. Renault wouldn't pull out unless absolutely necessary. His disappearance would require removing both himself and Valette from their carefully prepared positions. Kelsier stuffed a handful of rations into his pack, then swung it onto his back.
What about me, Kel?
You're going back to the garrison like you promised. That was clever thinking. We need an informant in there.
Ham frowned apprehensively.
I don't have time to deal with your nerves right now, Ham. You don't have to scam. Just be yourself and listen.
I won't turn against the garrison if I go with them. I'll listen, but I'm not going to attack men who think I'm their ally.
Fine, but I sincerely hope you can find a way not to kill any of our soldiers either. Sezed?
Yes, Master Kelsier?
How much speed do you have stored up?
Perhaps 2-3 hours. It is a very difficult attribute to collect.
Not long enough. I'll go alone. Docs is in charge until I get back.
Kelsier spun, then paused. Vin stood behind him in the same trousers, cap, and shirt she had worn to the garrison. She had a pack like his slung over her shoulder, and she looked up at him defiantly.
This is going to be a difficult trip, Vin. You've never done anything like this before.
That's fine.
Kelsier nodded. He pulled his trunk out from beneath the table, then opened it and poured Vin a small pouch of pewter beads. She accepted it without comment.
Swallow 5 of those beads.
5?
For now. If you need to take some more, call to me so we can stop running.
Running? We're not taking a canal boat?
Why would we need a boat?
Vin glanced down at the pouch, then grabbed a cup of water and began to swallow beads.
Make sure you have enough water in that pack. Take as much as you can carry.
Kelsier walked over to lay a hand on Doxon's shoulder.
It's about 3 hours before sunset. If we push hard, we can be there by noon tomorrow.
That might be early enough.
Maybe. The Valtro garrison is only 3 days' march from Holstep. Even riding all night, a messenger couldn't have gotten to Luthadel in under 2 days. By the time I get to the army...
Doxon could obviously read the worry in Kelsier's eyes.
By the way, the army is useless to us now.
I know. This is just about saving those men's lives. I'll get word to you as soon as I can.
Doxon nodded. Kelsier turned, flaring his pewter. His pack suddenly became as light as if it had been empty.
Burn your pewter, Vin. We're leaving.
She nodded, and Kelsier felt a pulsing come from her.
Flare it!
Kelsier pulled two mist cloaks from his trunk and tossed one to her. He put on the other, then walked forward, throwing open the back door to the kitchen. The red sun was bright overhead. Frantic crew members paused for a moment, turning to watch as Kelsier and Vin left the building.
Han told me that I should learn to use pewter only when I need it. He said it's better to be subtle.
This is not a time for subtlety. Stay close to me, try to keep up, and make absolutely certain you don't run out of pewter.
Vin nodded, suddenly looking a bit apprehensive.
All right, let's go.
Kelsier took off down the alleyway in a superhuman dash. Vin jumped into motion, following him out of the alley and onto the street. Pewter was a blazing fire within her. Flared as it was, she would probably go through all five beads in barely an hour. The street was busy with ska workers and noble carriages. Kelsier ignored the traffic, bolting out into the very center of the street, maintaining his ridiculous speed. Vin followed, growing increasingly worried about what she had gotten herself into.
I can't let him go alone.
Of course, the last time she'd forced Kelsier to take her with him, she'd ended up half dead in a sickbed for a month. Kelsier wove between carriages, brushing past pedestrians, charging down the street as if it were meant only for him. Vin followed as best she could, the ground a blur beneath her feet, people passing too quickly for her to see their faces.
The cloaks! That's why we're wearing them. That's why we always wear them. Noblemen who see the mist cloaks will know to stay out of our way.
Kelsier turned, running directly toward the northern city gates. Vin followed. Kelsier didn't slow as he approached the gates, and the lines of people began to point. Checkpoint guards turned with surprised faces. Kelsier jumped. One of the armored guards crumpled to the ground, smashed down by Kelsier's alimentic weight as the crew leader passed overhead. Vin dropped a coin to give herself a bit of a lift and jumped. She easily cleared a second guard, who looked up with surprise as his companion squirmed on the ground. Vin pushed against the soldier's armor, throwing herself higher into the air. The man staggered, but stayed on his feet. Vin was nowhere near as heavy as Kelsier. She shot over the wall. She could only hope that nobody recognized her. It wasn't likely. Though her cap flew free as she soared through the air, those who were familiar with Valette, the court-going lady, would probably never connect her to a Mistborn in dirty trousers. Kelsier completed his arc before her and began to descend, and Vin soon followed. It felt very strange to use allomancy in the sunlight. Unnatural, even. Vin made the mistake of looking down as she fell. Instead of comfortable swirling mists, she saw the ground far below.
So high!
Fortunately, Vin wasn't too disoriented to push against the coin Kelsier had used to land. She slowed her descent to a manageable level before landing on the ashen earth. Kelsier immediately took off down the highway. Vin followed him. Now that they were out of the city, she had thought Kelsier might slow down. He didn't. He sped up. And suddenly, she understood Kelsier didn't intend to walk or even jog to the caves. He planned to dash all the way there. It was a 2-week trip by canal. How long would it take them? They were moving fast, horribly fast. Slower than a galloping horse, certainly, but surely a horse couldn't maintain such a gallop for very long. Vin didn't feel fatigue as she ran. She relied on the pewter, only passing a little of the strain onto her body. She could barely feel her footsteps hitting the ground beneath her, and with such a large reserve of pewter, she felt that she could maintain the speed for a decent length of time. She caught up to Kelsier, falling into place beside him.
This is easier than I thought it would be.
Pewter enhances your balance. Otherwise, you'd be tripping over yourself right now.
What do you think we'll find? At the caves, I mean.
No use talking. Save your strength.
But I'm not feeling weary at all.
We'll see what you say in 16 hours.
Kelsier sped up even more as they turned off the highway, running onto the wide towpath beside the Luth-Davin Canal.
16 hours?
Vin fell behind Kelsier slightly, giving herself plenty of space to run. Kelsier increased their speed until they were going at a maddening pace. He was right. In any other context, she would have quickly missed her step on the uneven road. Yet with pewter and tin guiding her, she managed to stay on her feet, though doing so required increasing attention as the evening grew dark and the mists came out. Occasionally, Kelsier threw down a coin and launched himself from one hilltop to another. However, he mostly kept them running at an even pace, sticking to the canals. Hours passed, and Vin began to feel the fatigue that he had implied would come. She maintained her speed, but she could feel something underneath it, a resistance within, a longing to stop and rest. Despite pewter's power, her body was running out of strength. She made certain to never let her pewter run low. She feared that if it ever went out, the fatigue would come upon her so powerfully that she wouldn't be able to get started again. Kelsier also ordered her to drink a ridiculous amount of water, though she wasn't that thirsty. The night grew dark and silent, no travelers daring to brave the mists. They passed canal boats and barges tied up for the night, as well as the occasional camp of canal men, their tents huddled closely against the mists. Time became a blur, and the running came to dominate all that Vin was and did. Moving demanded so much attention that she could barely even focus on Kelsier ahead of her in the mists. She kept putting one foot ahead of the other, her body remaining strong, yet at the same time feeling terribly exhausted. Every step became a chore. She began to yearn for rest. Kelsier didn't give it to her. He kept running, forcing her on, maintaining the incredible speed. Vin's world became a timeless thing of forced pain and burgeoning enervation. They slowed occasionally to drink water or swallow more pewter beads, but she never stopped running. It was like she couldn't stop. Vin let the exhaustion overwhelm her mind. Flared pewter was everything. She was nothing else. Light surprised her. The sun began to rise, the mists vanishing. But Kelsier didn't let the illumination stop them. How could he? They had to run. They had to. They just had to keep running.
I'm going to die.
It wasn't the first time the thought had occurred to Vin during the run. In fact, the idea kept circling in her mind, picking at her brain like a carrion bird. She kept moving, running.
I hate running. That's why I've always lived in a city, not out on the countryside, so I wouldn't have to run.
Something within her knew that the thought didn't make any kind of sense. However, lucidity was not currently one of her virtues.
I hate Kelsier, too. He just keeps on going. How long has it been since the sun rose? Minutes, hours, weeks, years? I swear, I don't think...
Kelsier slowed to a stop on the road ahead of her.
What? Oh.
Vin was so stunned that she nearly collided with him. She stared down at her feet, dumbfounded.
This is wrong. I can't just stand here. I have to be moving.
She felt herself begin to move again, but Kelsier grabbed her.
Rest. Relax. You've forgotten what that is, but it's so nice.
Vin, don't extinguish your pewter. Keep it burning or you'll fall unconscious.
Oh.
Vin shook her head, disoriented, trying to make out his words.
Tin, flare it, now!
Her head blazed with a sudden headache that she had almost forgotten, and she had to close her eyes against the blinding sunlight. Her legs ached, and her feet felt even worse. The sudden wash of senses restored her sanity, however, and she blinked, looking up at Kelsier.
Better?
She nodded.
You've just done something incredibly unfair to your body. It should have shut down hours ago, but you have pewter to make it keep going. You'll recover. You'll even get better at pushing yourself like this. But right now, you just have to keep burning the pewter and stay awake. We can sleep later.
Vin nodded again.
Why did we stop?
Listen.
A battle?
The city of Holstep is about an hour more to the north. But I think we've found what we came for. Come on.
He released her, dropping a coin and jumping over the canal. Vin followed him as he rushed up a nearby hill. Kelsier crested it, peeking over the top. Then he stood up, staring at something to the east. Vin crested the hill and easily saw the battle, such as it was, in the distance. A shift in the wind brought scents to her nostrils.
Blood.
The valley beyond was speckled with corpses. Men still fought on the far side of the valley. A small, ragged group in unmatched clothing was surrounded by a much larger, uniformed army.
We're too late. Our men must have finished off the Holstep garrison, then tried to march back to the caves. But Valtro City is only a few days away, and its garrison is 5,000 strong. Those soldiers got here before we did.
Squinting, using tin despite the light, Vin could see that he was right. The larger army wore Imperial uniforms, and if the line of corpses was any indication, it had ambushed the Ska soldiers as it passed. Their army didn't have a chance. As she watched, the Ska began to throw up their hands, but the soldiers just kept on killing them. Some of the remaining peasants fought desperately, but they were falling almost as quickly.
It's a slaughter. The Valtro garrison must have orders to wipe out the entire group.
Kelsier stepped forward.
Kelsier, what are you doing?
There are still men down there. My men!
What are you going to do? Attack an entire army by yourself? For what purpose? Your rebels don't have Allomancy. They won't be able to run away on swift feet and escape. You can't stop an entire army, Kelsier.
He shook himself free of her grip. She didn't have the strength to hold on. She stumbled, falling to the rough black dirt. Kelsier began to stalk down the hill toward the battlefield. Vin climbed to her knees.
Kelsier, we aren't invincible, remember? You're not invincible. You can't stop them all. You can't save those men.
Kelsier stood quietly, his fists clenched. Then slowly, he bowed his head. In the distance, the massacre continued, though there weren't many rebels left.
The caves. Our force would have left men behind, right? Maybe they can tell us why the army exposed itself. Maybe you can save the ones who stayed behind. The Lord Ruler's men will certainly search out the army's headquarters, if they aren't trying already.
All right. Let's go.
Kelsier dropped down into the cavern. He had to flare tin to see anything in the deep darkness, lit only by a bit of reflected sunlight from far above. In the cavern itself, nothing. No sound, no light.
So she was wrong. No one stayed behind.
Kelsier tried to find an outlet for his frustration and anger. He'd abandoned his men on the battlefield. He shook his head, ignoring what logic told him at the moment. His anger was still too fresh. Vin dropped to the ground beside him, her figure no more than a shadow to his straining eyes.
Empty. You were wrong.
No. There.
Suddenly she was off, scrambling across the floor with a cat-like litheness. Kelsier gritted his teeth, then followed her by sound down one of the corridors.
Vin, get back here. There's nothing...
He paused. He could just barely make out a flicker of light ahead of him in the corridor.
Bloody hell. How did she see it from so far away?
Kelsier made his way more carefully, checking his metal reserves, worried about a trap left by Ministry agents. He drew nearer to the light.
Who's there? Say the password.
Kelsier continued walking, the light growing bright enough for him to see a spear-holding figure backlit in the corridor ahead. Vin waited in the darkness, crouching. She looked up questioningly as Kelsier passed. She seemed to have gotten over the drain of the pewter drag for the moment. When they finally stopped to rest, however, she'd feel it.
I can hear you. Identify yourself.
Captain DeMo, one of ours. It's not a trap.
Say the password.
I need no password.
Kelsier stepped into the light. DeMo lowered his spear.
Lord Kelsier, you've come. Does that mean the army succeeded?
Why aren't you guarding the entrance back there?
We thought it would be more defensible to retreat to the inner complex, my lord. There aren't a lot of us left.
Kelsier glanced back toward the entrance corridor.
How long until the Lord Ruler's men find a captive willing to talk? Vin was right after all. We need to get these men to safety.
Vin stood and approached, studying the young soldier with those quiet eyes of hers.
How many of you are there?
About 2,000. We were wrong, my lord. Sorry.
Wrong?
We thought General Yeadon was acting rash. We stayed behind. We thought we were being loyal to you rather than him. But we should have gone with the rest of the army.
The army is dead. Gather your men, DeMo. We need to leave now.
That night, sitting on a tree stump with the mists gathering around him, Kelsier finally forced himself to confront the day's events. He sat with his hands clasped before him, listening to the last sounds of the army's men bedding down. Fortunately, someone had thought to prepare the group for quick departure. Each man had a bedroll, a weapon, and enough food for 2 weeks. As soon as Kelsier discovered who had been so foresighted, he intended to give that man a hefty promotion. Not that there was much to command anymore. The remaining 2,000 men included a depressingly large number of soldiers who were past or before their prime. Men wise enough to see that Yeadon's plan had been insane, or men young enough to be frightened. Kelsier shook his head.
So many dead.
They'd gathered nearly 7,000 troops before this fiasco, but now most of them lay dead. Yeadon had apparently decided to test the army by striking at night against the Holstep garrison. What had led him to such a foolish decision?
Me. This is my fault.
He'd promised them supernatural aid. He'd set himself up, had made Yeadon a part of the crew, and had talked so casually about doing the impossible.
Was it any wonder that Yeadon had thought he could attack the Final Empire head-on, considering the confidence Kelsier had given him? Was it any wonder the soldiers would go with the man, considering the promises Kelsier had made? Now men were dead, and Kelsier was responsible. Death wasn't new to him. Neither was failure. Not anymore. But he couldn't get over the twisting in his gut. True, the men had died fighting the Final Empire, which was as good a death as any Ska could hope for. However, the fact that they'd likely died expecting some sort of divine protection from Kelsier, that was disturbing.
You knew this would be hard. You understood the burden you were taking upon yourself.
But what right had he? Even members of his own crew, Ham, Breeze, and the others, assumed that the Final Empire was invincible. They followed because of their faith in Kelsier, and because he had couched his plans in the form of a thieving job. Well, now that job's patron was dead. A scout sent to check the battlefield had, for better or worse, been able to confirm Yeadon's death. The soldiers had put his head on a spear beside the road, along with several of Ham's officers. The job was dead. They had failed. The army was gone. There would be no rebellion, no seizing of the city. Kelsier looked up, wondering if he even had the strength to stand. Vin lay curled up beside his tree stump, asleep on the hard ground, only her mist cloak for a cushion. Their extended pewter drag had taken a lot out of the girl, and she had collapsed virtually the moment Kelsier had called a halt for the night. He wished he could do the same. However, he was far more experienced with pewter dragging than she was. His body would give out eventually, but he could keep going for a bit longer. A figure appeared from the mists, hobbling in Kelsier's direction. The man was old, older than any Kelsier had recruited. He must have been part of the rebellion from earlier, one of the Ska who had been living in the caves before Kelsier hijacked them. The man chose a large stone beside Kelsier's stump and sat. It was amazing that one so old had even been able to keep up. Kelsier had moved the group at a fast pace, seeking to distance them as much as possible from the cave complex.
The men will sleep fitfully. They aren't accustomed to being out in the mists.
They don't have much choice.
I suppose they don't. You don't recognize me, do you?
I'm sorry. Did I recruit you?
After a fashion. I was one of the Ska at Lord Trusting's plantation.
Kelsier opened his mouth slightly in surprise, finally recognizing a slight familiarity to the man's bald head and tired, yet somehow strong posture.
The old man I sat with that night. Your name was...
Menace. After you killed Trusting, we retreated up to the caves where the rebels there took us in. A lot of the others left eventually, off to find other plantations to join. Some of us stayed.
You're behind this, aren't you? The preparations.
Some of us can't fight, so we do other things.
What happened, Menace? Why did Yeadon do this?
Though most expect young men to be fools, I've noticed that just a little bit of age can make a man far more foolish than he was as a child. Yeadon, well, he was the type of man who was too easily impressed, both by you and by the reputation you left for him. Some of his generals thought it might be a good idea to give the men some practical battle experience, and they figured a night raid on the Holstep garrison would be a clever move. Apparently it was more difficult than they assumed.
Even if they'd been successful, exposing the army would have made it useless to us.
They believed in you. They thought that they couldn't fail.
Kelsier rested his head back, staring up into the shifting mists.
So, what becomes of us?
We'll split you up, get you back into Lúthadel in small groups, lose you among the Ska population.
Menace nodded. He seemed tired, exhausted, yet he didn't retire. Kelsier could understand that feeling.
Do you remember our conversation back on Tresting's plantation?
A bit. You tried to dissuade me from making trouble.
But it didn't stop you.
Troublemaking is just about the only thing I'm good at, Menace. Do you resent what I did there? What I forced you to become?
Yes. But in a way, I'm thankful for that resentment. I believed that my life was over. I awoke each day expecting that I wouldn't have the strength to rise, but... Well, I found purpose again in the caves. For that, I'm grateful.
Even after what I did to the army?
Don't think quite so highly of yourself, young man. Those soldiers got themselves killed. You might have been their motivation, but you didn't make the choice for them. Regardless, this isn't the first Scar Rebellion to get slaughtered, not by far. In a way, you've accomplished a lot. You gathered an army of considerable size, and then you armed and trained it beyond what anyone had a right to expect. Things went a little more quickly than you anticipated, but you should be proud of yourself.
Proud?
Kelsier stood to work off some of his agitation.
This army was supposed to help overthrow the final empire, not get itself killed fighting a meaningless battle in a valley weeks outside of Luthadel.
Overthrow? You actually expected to do something like that?
Of course. Why else would I gather an army like this?
To resist, to fight. That's why those lads came to the caves. It wasn't a matter of winning or losing. It was a matter of doing something, anything, to struggle against the Lord Ruler.
You expected the army to lose from the beginning?
What other end was there?
Menace stood, shaking his head.
Some may have begun to dream otherwise, lad. But the Lord Ruler can't be defeated. Once I gave you some advice. I told you to be careful which battles you chose to fight. Well, I've realized that this battle was worth fighting. Now let me give you another piece of advice, Kelsier, survivor of Hath Sin. Know when to quit. You've done well, better than any would have expected. Those Scar of yours killed an entire garrison's worth of soldiers before they were caught and destroyed. This is the greatest victory the Scar have known in decades, perhaps centuries. Now it's time to walk away.
With that, the old man nodded his head in respect, then began to shuffle back toward the center of the camp. Kelsier stood dumbfounded.
The greatest victory the Scar have known in decades.
That was what he fought against. Not just the Lord Ruler, not just the nobility. He fought against 1,000 years of conditioning. 1,000 years of life in a society that would label the deaths of 5,000 men as a great victory. Life was so hopeless for the Ska that they'd been reduced to finding comfort in expected defeats.
That wasn't a victory, Menace. I'll show you a victory.
Kelsier forced himself to smile. Not out of pleasure, and not out of satisfaction. He smiled despite the grief he felt at the deaths of his men. He smiled because that was what he did. That was how he proved to the Lord Ruler, and to himself, that he wasn't beaten. No, he wasn't going to walk away. He wasn't finished yet. Not by far. Vin lay in her bed at Clubs' shop, feeling her head throb. Fortunately, the headache was growing weaker. She could still remember waking up on that first horrible morning. The pain had been so strong she'd barely been able to think, let alone move. She didn't know how Kelsier had kept going, leading the remnants of their army to a safe location. That had been over 2 weeks ago. 15 full days, and her head still hurt. Kelsier said it was good for her. He claimed that she needed to practice pewter dragging, training her body to function beyond what it thought possible. Despite what he said, however, she doubted something that hurt so much could possibly be good for her. Of course, it might well be a useful skill to have. She could acknowledge this now that her head wasn't pounding quite so much. She and Kelsier had been able to run to the battlefield in under a single day. The return trip had taken 2 weeks. Vin rose and stretched. They'd been back for less than a day, in fact. Kelsier had probably stayed up half the night explaining events to the other crew members. Vin, however, had been happy to go straight to bed. The nights spent sleeping on the hard earth had reminded her that a comfortable bed was a luxury she'd started to take for granted. She rubbed her temples again, then threw on a robe and made her way to the bathroom. She was pleased to see that Clubs' apprentices had remembered to draw her a bath. She locked the door, disrobed, and settled into the warm, lightly scented bathwater. Had she ever really found those scents obnoxious? The smell would make her less inconspicuous, true, but that seemed a slim price for ridding herself of the dirt and grime she'd picked up while traveling. She still found longer hair an annoyance, however. She washed it, combing out the tangles and knots, wondering how the court women could stand hair that went all the way down their backs. How long must they spend combing and primping beneath a servant's care? Vin's hair hadn't even reached her shoulders yet. She was already loath to let it get longer. It would fly about and whip her face when she jumped, not to mention provide her foes with something to grab onto. Once finished bathing, she returned to her room dressed in something practical and made her way downstairs. Apprentices bustled in the workroom and housekeepers worked upstairs, but the kitchen was quiet. Clubs, Doxson, Ham, and Breeze sat at the morning meal. They looked up as Vin entered.
What?
The four men exchanged glances.
We were just discussing the status of the plan now that both our employer and our army are gone.
Status? That's an interesting way of putting it, Hammond. I would have said unfeasibility instead.
The four turned to her, apparently waiting to see her reaction.
Why do they care so much what I think?
Vin walked into the room and took a chair.
You want something to eat? Clubs' housekeepers fixed some bay wraps for us to...
Ale.
It's not even noon.
Ale. Now. Please.
Vin leaned forward, folding her arms on the table and resting her head on them.
Pewter drag?
Vin nodded.
It'll pass.
If I don't die first.
Dox handed her a mug, then sat, glancing at the others.
So, Vin, what do you think?
I don't know. The army was pretty much the center of everything, right? Breeze, Ham, and Yeadon spent all their time recruiting. Doxson and Renault worked on supplies. Now that the soldiers are gone, well, that only leaves Marsh's work with the ministry and Kel's attacks on the nobility. And neither are things he needs us for. The crew is redundant.
She has a depressingly blunt way of putting it.
Pewter drag will do that to you.
When did you get back anyway?
Last night after you were asleep. The garrison sent us part-time soldiers back early so they wouldn't have to pay us.
They're still out there then?
Hunting down the rest of our army. The Luthadel garrison relieved the Valtro troops who were actually pretty beat up from the fighting. The majority of the Luthadel troops should be out for a long while yet searching for rebels. Apparently, several very large groups broke off of our main army and fled before the battle started.
Vin sipped at her ale, drinking it more out of spite than any belief that it would make her feel better. A few minutes later, Kelsier swept into the kitchen.
Good morning, all. Bay wraps again, I see. Clubs, you really need to hire more imaginative housemaids.
Despite the comment, he grabbed a cylindrical bay wrap and took a large bite, then smiled pleasantly as he poured himself something to drink. The men exchanged glances. Kelsier remained standing, leaning back against the cupboard as he ate.
Kel, we need to talk. The army is gone.
Yes, I noticed.
The job is dead, Kelsier. It was a good try, but we failed.
Failed? What makes you say that?
The army is gone, Kel.
The army was only one piece of our plans. We've had a setback, true, but we're hardly finished.
Oh, for the Lord's sake, man. How can you stand there so cheerfully? Our men are dead. Don't you even care?
I care, Breeze. But what is done is done. We need to move on.
Exactly. Move on from this insane job of yours. It's time to quit. I know you don't like that, but it's the simple truth.
Don't soothe me, Breeze. Never soothe me.
Fine, I won't use Alamancy. I'll just use truth. Do you know what I think? I think you never intended to grab that ATM. You've been using us. You promised us wealth, so we join you, but you never had any intention of making us rich. This is all about your ego. It's about becoming the most famous crew leader that ever lived. That's why you're spreading all these rumors, doing all this recruitment. You've known wealth. Now you want to become a legend.
Kelsier stood with his arms folded, regarding the crew. Several glanced aside, shamed eyes proving that they had considered what Breeze was saying. Vin was one of those. The silence persisted, all of them waiting for a rebuttal.
Willing the Cairn upping to sea, a gathering in the Fountain Square.
Kelsier didn't look surprised by the boy's announcement.
A gathering in the Fountain Square? That means...
Come on, we're going to watch.
I'd rather not do this, Kel. I avoid these things for a reason.
Kelsier walked at the head of the crew, who all, even Breeze, wore mundane ska clothing and cloaks. A light ashfall had begun, and careless flakes floated down from the sky like leaves dropped from an unseen tree. Large clusters of ska clogged the street, most of them workers from factories or mills. Vin knew of only one reason why the workers would be released and sent to gather in the city's central square.
Executions.
She'd never gone to them before. Supposedly, all the men in the city, ska or noble, were required to attend execution ceremonies, but thieving crews knew how to remain hidden. Obligators watched at the sides of the streets. They would go into mills, forges, and random houses, searching for those who disobeyed the call, meting out death as a punishment. Gathering this many people was an enormous undertaking. But in a way, doing things like this simply worked to prove how powerful the Lord Ruler was. The streets grew even more crowded as Vin's crew approached the Fountain Square. Building roofs were packed, and people filled the streets, pressing forward. It seemed as if there was no way they would all fit. Luthadel wasn't like most other cities. Its population was enormous. Even with only the men in attendance, there was no way everyone would have a view of the executions. Yet they came anyway, partially because they were required, partially because they wouldn't have to work while they watched, and partially, Vin suspected, because they had the same morbid curiosity that all men possessed. As the crowds grew thicker, Kelsier, Doxson, and Ham began to shove the crew a path through the onlookers. Some of the ska gave the crew looks of resentment, though many were just dull-eyed and compliant. Some appeared surprised, even excited, when they saw Kelsier, though his scars were not showing. These people moved aside eagerly. Eventually, the crew reached the outer row of buildings surrounding the square. Kelsier picked one, nodded toward it, and Doxson moved forward. A man at the doorway tried to bar his entrance, but Dox pointed toward the roof, then hefted his coin pouch suggestively. A few minutes later, the crew had the entire rooftop to themselves.
Smoke us, please, Clubs.
The gnarled craftsman nodded, making the crew invisible to allomantic bronze senses. Vin walked over and crouched beside the roof's lip, hands on the short stone railing as she scanned the square down below.
So many people.
You've lived in cities all your life, Vin. Surely you've seen crowds before.
Yes, but...
How could she explain? The shifting, overpacked mass was unlike anything she'd seen. It was expansive, almost endless, its trails filling every street leading away from the central square. The ska were packed so closely, she wondered how they even had room to breathe. The noblemen were at the center of the square, separated from the ska by soldiers. They were close to the central fountain patio, which stood about 5 feet above the rest of the square. Someone had constructed seating for the nobility, and they lounged as if they were visiting some show or racehorse. Many had servants holding up parasols against the ash, but it was falling lightly enough that some just ignored it. Standing beside the noblemen were the obligators, regular ones in gray, inquisitors in black. Vince shivered. There were 8 inquisitors, their lanky forms standing a head taller than the obligators. But it wasn't just height that separated the dark creatures from their cousins. There was an air, a distinctive posture about the steel inquisitors. Vin turned, studying the regular obligators instead. Most of them held themselves proudly in their administrative robes. The higher their position, the finer the robes. Vin squinted, burning tin, and recognized a moderately familiar face.
There. That one's my father.
Where?
At the front of the obligators. The shorter one with the golden robe scarf.
That's your father?
Who? I can't make out their faces.
Tavidian.
The Lord Prelin?
What? Who's that?
Oh, the Lord Prelin is the leader of the ministry, my dear. He's the most important of the Lord Ruler's obligators. Technically, he's even higher ranked than the Inquisitors.
Vin sat, dumbfounded.
The Lord Prelin. This just keeps getting better.
Look!
Spook pointed. The crowd of ska began to shuffle. Vin had assumed that they were too packed to move, but apparently she was wrong. The people began to pull back, making a large corridor leading to the central platform.
What can make them?
Then she felt it. The oppressive numbness, like a massive blanket pressing down, choking away her air, stealing her will. She immediately burned copper. Yet like before, she swore that she could feel the Lord Ruler's soothing despite the metal. She sensed him coming closer, trying to make her lose all will, all desire, all strength of emotion.
He's coming.
A black carriage drawn by a pair of massive white stallions appeared down a side street. It rolled down the corridor of Ska, moving with a sense of inevitability. The Ska sagged a bit more as the Lord Ruler arrived, a visible ripple washing through the crowd, their postures drooping as they felt his powerful soothing.
Oh, he's so powerful. Even at my best, I can only soothe a couple hundred men. There have to be tens of thousands of people here.
Spook looked over the rim of the rooftop.
It makes me want to fall, to just let go.
Then he paused. He shook his head, as if waking up. Vin frowned. Something felt different. Tentatively, she extinguished her copper and realized that she could no longer feel the Lord Ruler's soothing. The feeling of awful depression, of soullessness and emptiness, had strangely disappeared. Spook looked up and noticed that the rest of the crew members stood just a little straighter. Vin glanced around. The Ska below looked unchanged. Yet, her friends... Her eyes found Kelsier. The crew leader stood straight-backed, staring resolutely at the approaching carriage, a look of concentration on his face.
He's rioting our emotions. He's counteracting the Lord Ruler's power.
It was obviously a struggle for Kelsier to protect even their small group.
Breeze is right. How can we fight something like this? The Lord Ruler is soothing 100,000 people at once.
But Kelsier fought on. Just in case, Vin turned on her copper. Then she burned zinc and reached out to help Kelsier, rioting the emotions of those around her. It felt like she was pulling against some massive, immobile wall. Yet it must have helped, for Kelsier relaxed slightly, shooting her a grateful look.
The prisoner carts.
Doxson pointed toward a set of 10 large bar-lined carts traveling down the corridor behind the Lord Ruler.
Do you recognize anyone in them?
Nodding of the recognizing anyone.
You weren't there for a lot of the recruiting, though, Spook.
True.
Kelsier stepped up to the ledge, holding a hand up to shade his eyes.
No, I don't recognize any of the faces. They aren't captive soldiers.
Who then?
Mostly women and children, it appears.
The families of the soldiers?
I doubt it. They wouldn't have taken the time to identify dead Ska.
Ham frowned, looking confused.
Random people, Hammond. Examples. Casual executions made in order to punish the Ska for harboring rebels.
No, not even that. I doubt the Lord Ruler even knows or cares that most of those men were recruited from Luthadel. He probably just assumes that it was another countryside rebellion. This is just a way of reminding everyone who is in control.
The Lord Ruler's carriage rolled up a platform onto the central patio. The ominous vehicle pulled to a stop in the exact center of the square, but the Lord Ruler himself remained inside. The prisoner carts pulled to a stop, and a group of obligators and soldiers began to unload them. Black ash continued to fall as the first group of prisoners, most struggling only weakly, were dragged up onto the raised central platform. An inquisitor directed the work, gesturing for prisoners to be gathered beside each of the platform's four bowl-like fountains. Four prisoners were forced to their knees, one beside each running fountain, and four inquisitors raised obsidian axes. Four axes fell, and four heads were sheared free. The bodies, still held by soldiers, were allowed to spurt their last life blood into the fountain basins. The fountains began to glisten red as they sprayed into the air. The soldiers tossed the bodies aside, then brought four more people forward.
Why doesn't Kelsier do something? To saving them, I mean.
Don't be foolish. There are 8 Inquisitors down there, not to mention the Lord Ruler himself. Kelsier would be an idiot to try something. Though I wouldn't be surprised if he considered it.
Vin remembered when Kelsier had been ready to rush down and take on an entire army by himself. She glanced to the side. Kelsier looked like he was forcibly holding himself back, white-knuckled hands gripping the chimney beside him, to keep himself from rushing down to stop the executions. Spook stumbled over to another part of the rooftop where he could retch without spilling bile onto the people below. Clubs looked saddened. Doxson watched solemnly, as if witnessing the deaths were some sort of vigil. Breeze just shook his head. Kelsier, however. Kelsier was angry. His face red, his muscles tense, his eyes ablaze. 4 more deaths, one of them a child.
This...
Kelsier angrily waved his hand toward the central square.
This is our enemy. There is no quarter here. No walking away.
This is no simple job to be thrown aside when we encounter a few unexpected twists. Look at them!
Kelsier pointed at the bleachers full of nobility. Most of them appeared bored, and a few even seemed to be enjoying themselves, turning and joking with one another as the beheadings continued.
I know you question me.
Kelsier turned to the crew.
You think that I've been too hard on the nobility. Think that I relish killing them too much. But can you honestly see those men laughing and tell me that they don't deserve to die by my blade? I only bring them justice.
Vin searched the bleachers with urgent, tin-enhanced eyes. She found Elland sitting amid a group of younger men. None of them were laughing, and they weren't the only ones. True, many of the nobility made light of the experience, but there were some small minority who looked horrified.
Breeze, you asked about the Atium. I'll be honest. It was never my main goal. I gathered this crew because I wanted to change things. We'll grab the Atium we needed to support a new government, but this job isn't about making me or any of you wealthy. Eden is dead. He was our excuse. A way that we could do something good while still pretending to just be thieves. Now that he's gone, you can give up if you want. Quit. But that won't change anything. The struggle will go on. Men will still die. You'll just be ignoring it. It's time to stop the charade.
Kelsier stared at them each in turn.
If we're going to do this now, we have to be upfront and honest with ourselves. We have to admit that this isn't about money. It's about stopping that!
Kelsier pointed at the courtyard with its red fountains, a visible sign of death for the thousands of Ska too far away to even tell what was happening.
I intend to continue my fight. I realize that some of you question my leadership. You think I've been building myself up too much with the Ska. You whisper that I'm making myself into another Lord Ruler. You think that my ego is more important to me than overthrowing the Empire.
Vin saw guilt in the eyes of Doxin and the others. Spook rejoined the group, still looking a bit sick.
You're wrong. You have to trust me. You gave me your confidence when we began this plan, despite how dangerous things seemed. I still need that confidence. No matter how things appear, no matter how terrible the odds, we have to keep fighting.
The crew slowly turned toward Kelsier. Resisting the Lord Ruler's pushing on their emotions didn't seem like half as much a struggle for Kelsier anymore, though Vin had let her zinc lapse.
Maybe he can do it. If there was ever a man who could defeat the Lord Ruler, it would be Kelsier.
I didn't choose you men because of your competence, though you are certainly skilled. I chose each of you specifically because I knew you to be men of conscience. Ham, Breeze, Docks, Clubs, you are men with reputations for honesty, even charity. I knew that if I were going to succeed at this plan, I would need men who actually cared. No, Breeze, this isn't about boxings or about glory. This is about war. A war we have been fighting for 1,000 years. A war I intend to end. You may go if you wish. You know I'll let any of you out, no questions asked, no repercussions exacted, if you wish to go. However, if you stay, you have to promise to stop questioning my authority. You can voice concerns about the job itself, but there will be no more whispered conferences about my leadership. If you stay, you follow me. Understood?
One by one, he locked eyes with the crew members. Each one gave him a nod.
I don't think we ever really questioned you, Kel. We're worried, and I think rightly so. The army was a big part of our plans.
Kelsier nodded to the north, toward the main city gates.
What do you see up in the distance, Docks?
The city gates?
And what is different about them recently?
Nothing unusual. They're a bit understaffed, but...
Why? Why are they understaffed?
Because the garrison is gone?
Exactly. Ham says that the garrison could be out chasing remnants of our army for months, and only about 10% of its men stayed behind. That makes sense. Stopping rebels is the sort of thing the garrison was created to do. Luthadel might be exposed, but no one ever attacks Luthadel. No one ever has.
A quiet understanding passed between the members of the crew.
Part one of our plan to take the city has been accomplished. We got the garrison out of Luthadel. It cost us far more than we expected. Far more than it should have. I wish to the forgotten gods that those boys hadn't died. Unfortunately, we can't change that now. We can only use the opening they gave us. The plan is still in motion. The main peacekeeping force in the city is gone. If a house war starts in earnest, the Lord Ruler will have a difficult time stopping it, assuming he wants to. For some reason, he tends to step back and let the nobility fight each other every 100 years or so. Perhaps he finds that letting them at each other's throats keeps them away from his own.
But what if the garrison comes back?
If I'm right, the Lord Ruler will let them chase stragglers from our army for several months, giving the nobility a chance to blow off a little steam. Except, he's going to get a lot more than he expected. When that house war starts, we're going to use the chaos to seize the palace.
With what army, my dear man?
We still have troops left. Plus, we'll have time to recruit more. We'll have to be careful. We can't use the caves, so we'll have to hide our troops in the city. That will probably mean smaller numbers. However, that won't be an issue. You see, that garrison is going to return eventually.
The members of the group shared a look as the executions proceeded below. Vin sat quietly, trying to decide what Kelsier meant by that statement.
Exactly, Kel. The garrison will return and we won't have a big enough army to fight them.
But we will have the Lord Ruler's treasury. What is it you always say about those garrisoners, Ham?
The thug paused, then smiled, too.
That they're mercenaries.
We seize the Lord Ruler's money, and it means we get his army, too. This can still work, gentlemen. We can make it work.
The crew seemed to grow more confident. Vin, however, turned her eyes back toward the square. The fountains ran so red that they seemed completely filled with blood. Over it all, the Lord Ruler watched from within his jet-black carriage. The windows were open, and with Tin, Vin could just barely see a silhouetted figure sitting within.
That's our real foe. Not the missing garrison, not the Inquisitors with their axes. That man. The one from the logbook. We'll have to find a way to defeat him. Otherwise, everything else we do will be pointless.